You're listening to the Black British Parent Podcast, having conversations, sharing experiences, and supporting the Black British Parent community with your host, Deborah Field Pelly.
So again, thank you, Verona, for joining us today.
Thank you. So, yeah, just to clarify, so I'm Verona Spencer-Dolfo. I am one half of what is known as Ancestral Voices, which is an educational initiative set up by myself and my husband, Dalian, where we explore African spiritual philosophies and practices. And we ultimately share information from the research that we've accumulated over the past 12 years.
You've done that so much better than I did.
It's practice, man. I've been having to recite this so many times. Now it rolls. When you ask me other questions, watch me like,
Yeah. So how did Ancestral Voices come about? I think that's important for us to know.
Yeah. So Ancestral Voices came about literally from our own separate journeys, myself and Dalian. I actually started to kind of question about African spirituality before I met him, and he'd already started his own journey of connecting with his grandmother, who had then passed, but he still did veneration practices for her, which he was intuitively guided to do. And then by the time we met and had conversations that, oh my gosh, you're in this, on this path too, I was like, wow, because everyone I met was like straight up Christian and looking at me like I was a heathen for even having these questions in my mind. So when I met Dalian, we were on the same path. He was a teacher by profession. I was like a media creative, and he's a media creative as well. So then we just put our skill set together and was like, you know what? Let's create something that allows us to have this conversation on a wider platform for people to learn about it. And so we first started with creating a documentary, which we started filming in 2010. So bear this in mind, I met Dalian in 2009. By 2010, we were already filming a documentary. Wow. So, you know, when people come together and it's just like, okay, bam, like, let's go. And so we started filming. It was a holiday that I was supposed to be going to meet Dalian's parents in Ghana, which we actually used to start filming in Ghana. Even got his mum roped in. She was helping us find people on the ground to interview. So it was just like a really surreal experience. So anyway, we created that documentary. And on the back of it, we launched it here in the UK. And it did fairly well. Like, a lot of people were open to it because we were exploring something that up until that point had not been a mainstream conversation. Most people leave African spirituality to a conversation that's held behind closed doors. And for many people, even then, it's like, why are you asking about this? This is Obia, this is witchcraft, stay away. So we were like really surprised by the positive feedback we had, and people were like, we want more, we really need more of this information. So we decided to film a sequel documentary that actually took a whopping 5 years to make. And I have to stress this, 5 years. Now, bearing in mind, by this point, we'd had two children, and we were just like, well, the two children came throughout that whole process. And we were just working hard, just trying to pull this together on like minimal resources, you know, filming in one location, filming in another 1 year, and just working towards it. But we had a vision, like, we're going to put this film together. And the reason why we felt so passionate about it is because the film was, the whole point of the film was to highlight the unified themes that exist throughout African cosmologies. And quite often we're always taught that, you know, Africans, they believe in different things and there's different tribes and blah, blah, blah. And they always try to make out like everything's so divisionary. Mm-hmm. Whereas our research showed that you can go from North Africa and ancient Kemet to Southern Africa towards the Zulus. You can go to East Africa with the Oromos in Ethiopia. You can go to West Africa with the Yoruba of Nigeria. And you're finding the same core principles that exist. And if we want to take it outside of Africa, you can go to the diaspora. You know, we can look in the Americas. We can look into other areas where these traditions have survived and continued. And so it was so important for us to do this piece of work, because what it does is it ultimately unifies us. And for myself, someone being from the diaspora, I'm Jamaican, it was groundbreaking for me, because I've always struggled with the fact that I didn't know where I was from in the African continent. But by doing this work, I'm like, I don't have that fear anymore. I don't have that insecurity anymore, because I'm so aware that all of this knowledge, number one, exists within us anyway. But number two, we're all connected by the core spiritual principles. And so it was really important for us to get this work out. So from the back of the second film, we went on to books and other courses and all this other work, which we can get into further. But ultimately, that's what we did. And our whole premise, everything we stand for as Ancestral Voices, is to share our story from our own voices, free from religious and colonial propaganda, which has historically damaged us in a way that we are literally scared to know ourselves and know our own story. And we're here to break that cycle.
Might as well end now that no, Jackie.
Even I was impressed with that one. I'm like, okay.
Do you know what? It's mad that, because the whole time I'm listening to what you're saying just then, like I only know so much, and I've studied different things, different areas. And I grew up in Roman Catholic religion in church, and it was all I knew, and it's the only thing that made sense. Oh my god, if my grand listens to this now, gosh. Anyway, both my grandparents, by the way, anyway, so I've got a couple of things to add into there. So like through that process, getting older and maturing and studying and listening to people, different things. And I started to see, do you know what? I started pushing away from Catholicism, obviously, just because it never made sense to me. And then when you study things like the African Holocaust, African history, and, you know, the transatlantic slave trade and colonialism and all these kinds of things, you can see how religion played a big part, especially Catholicism, in a lot of the destruction and a lot of the trauma and a lot of the atrocities that happened to our people, our ancestors. So that was really hard for me to hang on to a religion that I knew, you know, had its core foundation in that kind of area. Moving forward, having gone through years, how old am I now? Maybe about 25 years of you know, conversations and studying and reading and listening, it's kind of mad how it's taking me full back circle to the Bible again in a weird kind of way. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's not to say taking back to the Bible to be practicing that religion, but I can see the stories in the Bible, how they relate to the other stories that I've read or listened to in our indigenous original, you know, the first peoples of the planet. It's very, you can see where it was stolen or mimicked or copied. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I mean? And that's what I found. It was just the other day I was at one of my grandparents' houses, and she started grilling me on why my children haven't had their first communion and their confirmation and stuff. And I was just like, I tried to run away from the conversation. I just didn't want to. Do you get me? Have that kind of conversation, because two things you don't discuss in the Black family household is politics and religion, isn't it? That's what they say. Mm-hmm. You don't have those conversations, and I found, ironically, knowing that I'm going to have this conversation with you, that a couple of days ago, I haven't been grilled by no one about religion for a long time, you know. Okay. And then that time, my gran just proper put it on me, and my children are sitting there watching me squirm these questions. Do you guys say? Because I don't want to disrespect my nan, obviously, and there's only so much you've got time to even listen to. But I just brought me back to that interesting space of how I feel, and I imagine for others it can be difficult going on that that journey, that quest, and of seeking knowledge, and things like that, and the resistance that you're up against with the ones that are closest to you. Did you find that you had that kind of resistance yourself with the Ancestral Voices?
It's funny. I guess our friends and family, I think they were looking at us like, why are they choosing this of all things to talk about? But no one ever, like, overtly in our faces were disrespectful or whatever. But we had some friends who were kind of, you know, like people, you know, like when they say the term, there's the pink elephant in the room and no one's to address it type of thing. And people will literally dance around conversations like, you know what we're doing, but you're not going to talk about it. So then it would just become weird. But then we did enter certain spaces. Like we had a screening before at the BFI where we had a film, a double film screening with a Fela Kuti documentary. It was a fantastic documentary. And there's a part of it where he's openly talking about his Yoruba culture and stuff. And anyone who's ever watched Fela, he's very, very proud of his African heritage and his Yoruba culture. So when our documentary, which is our first film, Esoteric African Knowledge, was supposed to be screened alongside it, we actually had people get up and walk out the cinema. Like, that was shocking to us. People were like, what is this? And then literally one man came up to Dalian and was like, how dare you? Like, what is this? Like, he wanted to fight you. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. So that has been like, out of all the experiences, that's been the most standout. But in general, people come and tell us all the time, like, it's witchcraft. Like, on our social media, people will say, oh, it's witchcraft. This belongs in the past. Oh, African people was going about their ancestors. Da, da, da. Like, we get all kind of nonsense. But at the same time, we're not really fazed by it anymore. It's just like, it is what it is.
No, and
you mentioned before about when you are kind of going down that road of questioning spirituality and religion, that it can be quite lonely, particularly as you have a lot of family members who are quite strong-willed with their beliefs. And this is one of the reasons why we even created the Ancestral Voices platform, is because in our circles, we had no one really to talk about it. So when we met each other, it's like, oh, wow. So it was like someone I could bounce off. So then we were like, we need to create a space for people to feel comfortable where they can learn and have access to this information, but also kind of build an online community where you know you're not alone. And I think that is a very primary thing, is knowing that you're not alone in this. We are not the only ones questioning, saying our ancestors weren't all doing negative and evil stuff. Like, the fact that that's even been a belief that collectively a lot of us have bought into speaks volumes about the level of programming. Because let's say you don't agree with certain rituals that have taken place, we can find a lot of these rituals in other spiritual, you know, religions and spiritualities, whether, I don't know, Hinduism, you know, indigenous American practices and so forth. You'll find certain rituals that you may not feel comfortable with. But the point is, why do you only take umbrage with the African one? Yeah. Why is it when it's Africans doing it specifically, we have an issue with it? Then it's demonic, it's witchcraft, it's all these other terms that we don't apply to other spiritual philosophies. Mm. They are given respect, they're given honor, but when it comes to ours, they're denigrated. But then anyone who's seen Our Spirit is Eternal documentary, when you start looking at these philosophies and you start understanding that they're based around nature, they're based around understanding that you are the culmination of your ancestors. And then we look at modern science today that is telling you the same thing, that through your DNA, through your epigenetic memory, that you have the ability to tap into those ancestral memories and that you are a culmination of your ancestors. So this is the same thing that in our African spiritual teachings we knew. But now modern day science comes and puts words like epigenetics on it, and suddenly it's acceptable. And so this is the whole point, is that we need to know who we are as African people unapologetically, so we're not waiting on other people to put appropriate or supposedly appropriate labels on things so we can accept ourselves. For me, my wake up call came when, number one, I was never raised really religious. We had a white Jesus on the wall, but I was never... it didn't resonate with me. I was like, I don't know what you lot are peddling, but I ain't buying it. I'm not on it. Sorry, but that was just how I felt from a young age. I just, this does not resonate with me. But what did get me is, I think this is like the early 2000s. I really got into like what was called New Age spirituality.
Yeah, same here.
And so now, obviously, after doing all this research in African spirituality, I'm like, rah, these people have blatantly taken all the ancient knowledge, repackaged it, put a white face on it, and sell it back to you at a high price. That is what is going on. But you see, people who don't educate themselves about who they are will accept this watered down package of who they supposedly are, but won't actually go to learn from source. And so this is where I feel like the work of Ancestral Voices is important, because as I said, we give the voice back to the people themselves. If there's certain rituals that you feel uncomfortable about, learn. Find out what exactly is it they do. Learn the actual understanding, the philosophies, the concept of God, how, you know, everything in creation is a manifestation of the all, including us as human beings. We are also a part of that essence. So therefore, within ourselves, we are divine. So there's all these really powerful teachings that we haven't been told. And so often African spirituality is depicted negatively because they will show like this tiny little ritual or something, and they'll focus on that, but not ignore the bigger picture, the philosophies. If we look at the main core philosophies within these traditions, it's all about building good character. If we look at the Yoruba tradition, for example, where it speaks about, my brain has just gone Iwapele, sorry. So Iwapele is the term of developing good character within yourself. So that means holding yourself to a high standard, you know, be of service to others, be of benefit to your community and so forth. You'll have Obrapa, which is the term that is used amongst the Akan people of Ghana, which is ultimately the same thing, is that you, as a person, you are living to your highest ability, so that you become someone who is worthy of veneration upon death. And then if we even take it to ancient Kemet and we look at the principles of Ma'at, we're talking about truth, we're talking about justice, we're talking about, once again, reciprocity and balance, so that you can live in harmony with your environment, you can live in harmony in others, so you can, you know, acknowledge that divinity that exists within you. So these are all examples of ancient African spiritual teachings, the same thing that's apparently devil worship, but what I've just given are basic fundamental codes that if we apply that to our daily lives, look how empowered we can be from that.
Thank you so much. As you're talking, I just keep thinking about the candles that we blow out on our birthdays. Those are rituals.
Rituals!
You know what I mean? And again, it's one of the things I remember recall being in a Roman Catholic church. Everyone kneeled at the same time. Everyone stood up at the same time. Everyone said the psalms or you know, the prayers at the same time. It's all ritualistic. So yeah,
it's funny. I mean, like, for example, there's a post that we've shared recently on our page which is talking about some kind of a cleansing ritual done with a chicken, and people are losing their minds in the comments. Oh my god, how dare they treat the chicken like that? And I'm like, but I still hear the same one going KFC later on and eating chicken.
Or favorite.
When it comes to like Thanksgiving or Christmas, are you not eating that same bird on the table and that, you know, that sacrificial bird? But people don't realize they partake in ritual so much times. There's so many different areas of our lives where we're engaging in ritual. There's another ritual coming up, you know, later on this week. Or in America, they call it Memorial Day. Over here, it's Remembrance Day, which happens on the 11th of the 11th month. And at the time at 11 o'clock is when you're going to do 2 minutes silent. Like, boy, if you don't know about ritual, that's a big ritual. If you're telling me, anyone who's spiritually in tune can basically see that's a ritual. Yeah. So we participate in rituals all the time. So many people get scared of ritual. Oh my God, rituals are evil, it's demonic, it's witchcraft. Blah, blah, blah. There's nothing wrong with ritual. Ritual is a physical act for you to start to tap into that spiritual aspect of yourself. We are a combination of spirit and physical. So there's a spiritual realm and a physical realm that always operates in tandem with each other. How you choose to operate with that is down to you. But to deny one without the other, it doesn't make sense. So when you start seeing these things played out in society, just know it's a ritual. I don't know what their full intention is. I'm not claiming to know what their intention is. But anybody who understands spirituality and implements ritual, instead of following other people's rituals all the time, why not implement your own? Why not implement your own rituals that empower you? Implement rituals that, I don't know, you wake up in the morning and you call upon your ancestors and you ask them to guide you and help you to have an uplifting day ahead, to clear any obstacles that may be in your path, for you to walk along your highest purpose and achieve all your goals. These are rituals that you can set up for yourself. And to me, that's not witchcraft. That's not evil. That's not bad. That's your own perception. But equally, if you're participating in these mass rituals run by society, you don't know what you're feeding your energy into. If you're doing your own rituals, at least you know what your intention is and what you're aiming it for. And that reminds me, let me just make this point very clear as well. A lot of people say, oh, African spirituality is evil because people done this because they did some money ritual and blah, blah, blah. As I said before, there's rituals, there's spiritual knowledge, there's esoteric knowledge that exists. How people choose to use that knowledge is down to the individual. Now, remember what I said before? I said as well, when we look at these African spiritual teachings, they teach you about building good character. So this, the knowledge is not about putting negativity on people and putting spells and curses. That's a perversion, ultimately, of what these traditions are really about. At the end of the day, it's down to you how it is used. There's always positive and negative in any situation. And depending on your perspective, what is positive, what is negative? So at the end of the day, it's about, do you have the right character in your own self? Mm-hmm. And if you do or you don't, it doesn't matter what religion or spirituality you follow, because if you're not of a pure heart, you're going to do badness wherever you are. Under Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, whatever ism, do you see what I'm saying? It's down to the character of the person. There's spiritual knowledge that has always been out there and is not exclusive to Africa. You know, spiritual knowledge is throughout the whole world, but it's down to the individual. And this is why we have things set in place. This is why in traditional communities, there were like initiation practices people had to go through. There were rites of passages that people had to go through to develop people, to make sure that they were in a space to even acquire such knowledge. But what's happened right now is we have this explosion of spirituality, and there's a lot of information out there, and people can get their hands on information they're not necessarily ready to deal with. And that is also an issue that we do need to confront that's happening, not just in the African spiritual world, but just globally in general. So just like with anything in this world, it can be used for positive or negative, like fire. Fire can help you to heat your food, but it can also be used to burn someone. Doesn't make the fire itself bad.
I like that analogy. I was going to, I mean, that kind of swiftly moves us into the next question I had, which you kind of answered a little bit already, but if we can go a little bit further into it. And that's like in the 12 years since you've been working, since you began Ancestral Voices, have you noticed a shift in interest in African-centered spirituality? And what has that been like?
Yeah, it's changed a lot, because when we first started, it was kind of not new, because obviously it's still been an ongoing conversation. Everybody we've interviewed in our documentaries, they've been working relentlessly for decades, putting this information out there. So it wasn't new. But I guess in terms of today's generation, and I guess in more the digital space, what we did at that time was seen as like, wow, it's new. Whereas now there's so much people sharing information, which is fantastic. It's great to see that, because now it's become a conversation that is more open and accessible to many different groups of people. And even it's entered popular culture as well. There's many TV programs now where you'll see people who are practitioners of African spiritual faiths. This is not something that we'd seen before. Traditionally, whenever you see Black people on television, and if there's any kind of religious context, they're normally going to be Christian. And that's quite a heavily dominating theme that, you know, goes across the board when it comes to representing us on television. So changing that dynamic, I think, is definitely been quite powerful. But just in general, I feel like the conversation is a lot more open now. The stigma is still there, but it's disappearing. And I feel like it's great. I feel like these are all conversations that need to be had. I feel like moving forward, this understanding of African spirituality needs to be more in the academic space. This is what we've been trying to work at for many years now, is to have more courses and things in place that deal with these subjects. If you go into like theology studies and spirituality studies, when you go into like higher learning, you still find that African spirituality is not included. You may have a million and one courses that just focus on Christianity or the Abrahamic faiths, and then you may have things that cover like Hinduism and Shinto and stuff like that. African spirituality is very very still limited. So to see this more in academic spaces is needed. But I think as well, if I look at the other side of the explosion of so-called African spiritual thought being more in the mainstream, it's also opened up a lot of opportunity for charlatans. And this is something that we have particularly noticed on our page, on our social media platforms, as well as others who are also doing similar works, is that now you have a whole breed of these, I don't know whether they're bot accounts or whatever they are, who just, you know, pop up like rodents, just claiming to be spiritual priests and practitioners and, you know, targeting people. And a lot of people are getting duped by these people. So that's generally something that we do raise awareness on and share information about, because the worst thing is for something to be so stigmatized for so long, and then now people have a bad experience because they've come across the wrong person, and now they're back to believing, oh, it's all evil again. Yeah. So it's like a double-edged sword, but it is good to see the growth happening.
100%. I guess I think it's interesting, the whole concept of having African spirituality in academic settings and spaces, because it's and I understand why. I guess I'm playing devil's advocate in some ways here, but like, wouldn't having those that subject in those spaces leave it open to it being accessible by potentially the wrong people? I know it's already accessible by the wrong people now with social media. But do you get what I mean? I just wonder
how you're saying. I think that's a very valid argument. I think because we get this a lot as well. Like, some people are like, oh my God, like, how are you making this information available? And I think at the end of the day, there's levels of information, as I mentioned before. There's certain things that people are not, you know, that is for, you know, initiates and so forth. But everything that we put out there is generally to spread awareness. Understanding the philosophies, I think, is very key. Because once you start to understand the philosophies, not only do you get a good grasp of what African spirituality as an umbrella term is, and when I say it as an umbrella term, we're talking about all the different traditions that fall under that, but also you can see the correlations that exist with other spiritual faiths, because then you can start to see the bigger picture of how it fits into the global conversation of spirituality. But also, what we do is provide a sort of light introduction to the subject, I would suppose. Anything that's heavy and like ritualistic and so forth is more, that would be for those who have gone up higher levels and so forth. Mm-hmm. I don't see what we're teaching as being outside of what can be taught in academic spaces. And in terms of, you said that, you know, some people may have access to things that they shouldn't have or whatever, or it opens it up to a wider dynamic. And my answer to that is those people have done, been there, bought the T-shirt, done everything, been writing books about it. Because if we want to go looking and talk about African spirituality, a lot of the books that we've had to read and research are from like the early 1900s and so forth, and they're not written by us.
Mm.
So we have to understand that this is knowledge that has been co-opted from a long time ago anyway. And as I said, it's often repackaged and sold to us as New Age. So I think what is important is that we can have authentic African voices coming out and saying, this is our story. Because if we don't do that, we face erasure, which is what is happening, where you literally have someone else coming, taking all the information, all the gems, and renaming it something else. And then we're unable to recognize where the source of the knowledge comes from. So for that reason, I would say it's very imperative that we have these spaces.
I like that. I definitely agree. Because I do imagine some of the things that we are venturing into, like when we're the first baby steps into, it is usually from some metaphysical book that's written by Hay House or something. You know, it's a European. I'm one of those people that started.
Me too. Louise was one of my first people that I got into. So
I'm not knocking it. However, once you do start that journey, you realize that there are some original pieces of work there that are saying the same thing. And like you said, you realize it's being kind of copied. I think what's interesting is that these other people who are not us, who've been creating this work, it's like they are that deep into it for a reason. Do you know what I mean? They're educating themselves and each other, and we're running from that information. Do you know what I'm saying? I find that quite a interesting contrast.
Very, very.
But yeah. So what I did, I also, one of the things I want to ask you is how can families introduce or begin practicing African spirituality? How can we do that as a family, as a household? Do you know what I mean? Like introducing our children to these kinds of concepts.
Yeah. Well, you know what's fascinating is this is what I love us about us as Black people. we do so much things intuitively anyway. So I know that they've done studies and stuff on this where they've shown like, you know, African Caribbean front rooms, and they will show like they will have like a fireplace and people will have like their photos of all their family members and stuff. People are creating altars, not even knowing what the hell they're doing. But it's intuitively in us. So one thing you can do is you can set up an altar. Some people even get freaked out by the thought of an altar. But an altar is basically a space where you can venerate those who came before you. An altar cannot be set up for many purposes. But the purpose I'm speaking about now is for ancestral veneration. And the reason why that is a main staple theme for our African spiritual cosmologies is because, as I mentioned before, they are literally you. They exist within your DNA. And so by having that focal point, which you can put a photo up of, I don't know, your grandma, who you may have had a strong connection with, or whoever it is in your family line that you're like, I want to invite this person into my space. You can call upon them. You can light a candle in their name, in their honor. You can pour libation, which is the act of pouring water or leaving water out for them, as a symbolic gesture to say, thank you, I remember you, I honor you. And by doing these practices, what you're ultimately doing is awakening that aspect of them that exists within you. So as I said, they already are you. But by making that intentional effort to communicate with them, to say, thank you for everything you've done, you looked after me in life, may you still continue to walk with me, protect me and guide me. And by doing that, you now open yourself up to that aspect of yourself. And this is something that the family can do, whether it's on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, whatever frequency works with you and your family. And on the back of that act, just start watching your life. Just start to see if you notice any subtle differences. Now, when I first started this journey, I had been programmed by Hollywood, and I guess my religious programming as well. As much as I say I wasn't really raised in a religious household, you still to some degree inherit this kind of freak out zone thing. So when I was first told about ancestor reverence, I was like, I don't want anything to just jump out at me, you know, like I'm not ready for that. Like I'm not, I can't deal with that. Who knows me in real life? I get spooked really easily. But, you know, what we're talking about is really subtle things. When I first started this practice, how I started to recognize that I was being spiritually communicated was through numbers. So I started to see the number 11 all the time. That was how spirit manifested itself for me. It may be a case of you start seeing certain animals. You might be walking down the street and a cat starts following you all the way to your house or something mad like that. Like these things happen all the time now for me. But you'll start noticing your relationship with animals change. You start noticing like the finer details of things. You might get like a butterfly that comes and lands on you, or a moth that appears in the room when the windows have been open all day. Things like this. These are all different subtle forms of the way that spirit can communicate with you. And the more that you get into these practices, the more you're able to kind of tune in and recognize these messages when they happen, but also be able to identify what is being communicated back to you as well.
With ancestral voices, like you became a director, or you were directing before that?
So I was making short films before ancestral voices. And it's funny because this ancestral voices is not even the first film that Dali and I have even made together. We actually started, I think, the same year. Like, this is how I know we're just a weird couple. Like, we just do weird stuff. So we actually started filming a documentary together, I think the same year, called Portobello, which was filmed in the Notting Hill area, which focused on gentrification that happened in that area. And it's interesting because obviously we've all come to see moving forward with Grenfell Tower and what happened there. And we were already speaking to the residents, were saying, look, like, this is ridiculous. They're really pushing us out. And da, da, da. So I guess we've always had this kind of natural drive to deal with kind of social issues that are often not covered by the mainstream media. But once we did Ancestral Voices, it kind of blew up in a way that we didn't expect. But I think for us as well, is that we felt so passionate about it that it just became something that we just continue doing. So I haven't really made any documentaries or film content since Ancestral Voices. And I don't really miss it either. I feel like for me, if I'm doing anything, I've really got to do it from a sense of passion. And I feel like this has been my passion. So any of the stuff you see on our social media, like, I edit the videos for it. I do all that. So I actually get fun out of doing that. So I get fun out of telling certain narratives and making it look visually good. And I enjoy that. So that's kind of my way of storytelling. But I feel that if there were to be a story or some kind of content I wanted to put out, then I would do that. But right now, no. But I feel, sorry, I feel like I'm extending this question. But no, because I feel like the filmmaker hat is like one of the hats I wear, and I love that hat, and I feel like it's part of my creative expression, and I feel like that's so important for me. And like yourself, you said you feel like you're an empath. Definitely, I feel that with me too. And I feel like as empaths, you know, exploring our creativity in its various different forms is very empowering. So for me, I love being able to use film and media to share stories and through art. And one of the things I do is writing. So I do write a lot of articles for our website, and I enjoy that because sometimes I'll just get insights in my head and I'm like, spirit will call me to share it. And then other people are like, wow, I'm so glad you said that because it's answered X, Y, Z. So I've realized that part of my ancestral voices journey for me personally is now to start really tapping into myself and sharing my gifts with the world. And I feel like that's something that I've been hiding. So we had a conversation offline talking about, you know, putting ourselves out there and being a face. Like, if anyone's been following Ancestral Voices from the beginning would know that I've been hiding behind the camera for like years until I've been like pushed out. And, you know, I'm doing it and I'm embracing it because I realize that by doing that, I'm developing myself. And one of the things that spirit has been really calling me to do is to really embrace who I am, but embrace the kind of healing energy that I have as a person. And, you know, recently I've kind of moved into doing consultations with people and, you know, just kind of helping people along this path because it can be quite isolating. Now, many people ask, why were we not doing this before? Which is like a no-brainer, really. But, you know, as with anything in life, you have to come into it when you're ready. And I don't think I was ready. And I don't know why, you know, I took so long to get to that point. But, you know, as we said earlier, it's about overcoming aspects of yourself. So for me, I feel like more sharing the different aspects of me and using my own gifts to help others.
Yes, wicked. What? As we was having this conversation before, and I wish we started recording from then. And it's really crazy because I really could identify with a lot of the things you said, which I was quite surprised and intrigued that you felt the same way. And putting yourself out there, like, I'm just a regular everyday person. I'm a mom, I'm a wife, you know, I'm just doing my thing. And do you get what I mean? And then it's like, for the longest while with Black British Parent, I didn't want to put my face on there. And it wasn't because I wasn't proud of what I was doing. It's because I didn't need it to have a face. I didn't want it to be like me. Do you get what I'm saying? Although it is me, like it's the ideas is me, but at the same time that, like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? I just didn't want it to be too much focus on me. I want it to be focused on the thing in it and the people that it supports and you know, shares knowledge and stuff with, experiences with. And it was in the comments where I'm a person that likes the aspects I think I push into Black British Parent is accountability and awareness. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, you can be aware of certain information and not necessarily find that it's for you, but that awareness helps you to define whatever you know is for you from what isn't. Do you get what I mean? So for me, it was very much on that basis. And then it was like, well, you know, the kind of stuff that I'm sharing, there was a lot of comments saying that this must be some secret white supremacist and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, no, I'm black, I'm very black. But then I've said many times before, in terms of even the way that I look aesthetically, it's not necessarily welcoming. If you don't know me, then what you see, you have certain assumptions based on what you see of me. Do you get what I mean? Like, you would have to know me. There's some people that just meet me straight away and they get it. But for whatever reason, so I was very reluctant to show my face. And, you know, I think it's that thing of, like you said, being comfortable with self and your own thoughts and how you see things. I don't think I was necessarily prepared and set up for the kinds of criticism.
Yeah, that's the biggest one. It's like, damn, people go in on the internet.
You know, and then you got the other people that know you that aren't, you know, running a platform as such as that. And then, like, you know, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt or ignore it, or all these things that they're saying to do, which, you know, on normal circumstances, you could take that as that. But for what you have envisioned, for what you're doing, the work that you're embarking on, only you know how to deal with that. So that's been a very hard thing for me, and I'm not necessarily comfortable in front of the camera and on the microphone and stuff, or public speaking. I think it's just what helps me to do it is the passion, like what you're saying about with the directing work. It was a passion, and the not wanting to convince anyone or change anyone's mind, but to be there for those who are on that kind of journey already and want to tap into, just as you were saying with Ancestral Voices, the conversation weren't happening, so you want to create space for that. And I feel like that's what we wanted to try and create with Black British Parent. But creating content is so hard, man, when you're doing it all by yourself. Like,
it is deep. I must say, it's really weird because now obviously you have like all these things like TikTok and all this, so they're really pushing this whole video content. And I, as much as I'm out there making videos, so I do all these interviews and stuff, like the thought of me going to make like I don't see that happening. I don't think that's gonna happen. I don't know, like, it took me long enough to be able to go on the camera, much less be there making videos like, hi.
Again, our Black British Parent platform on Instagram started out as a private page. You know, and we only let Black British parents in. And then people started saying, no, but you got to open up for X, Y, Z. I'm thinking, it took me months in conversations with Dwayne and some very close people to me to figure out, is this something I really want to embark on? Because then that's going to start a snowball and it's going to get big. I knew it was going to get bigger. The way that it was already getting big on a private page, let alone it becoming an open one. And I think that was a scary thing. The exposure, I think, parts of my decisions of not wanting to, I think I kind of procrastinated a bit with it. And I don't mean in the typical business sense of the word, but I think in a way that I was like, I wasn't quite sure. It was getting bigger than I was
ready for.
Yeah, sort of thing. So I wasn't ready, and I'm literally getting, you know, like you see someone with a big old Rottweiler and they're getting dragged by the dog. That's what Black British Parent was with me. I'm just getting dragged by a, you know, so I wasn't quite ready for it, but I also knew that it was, I understood it. So I had to get ready for it in some ways.
I'm glad you opened your page anyway, because you like tag us and stuff and I would share with your posts and I couldn't like tag you back to say, you know, and I was like, why is your page locked? Like, what are you doing?
Now you know why it had been.
I hear you though, because even down to you, you had experiences with people like, who's behind this page? Like, Dalian and I, our pictures are on the website, all of this stuff. We, not so much now, but we've had people come, who's behind this page? It's white people. It's co.uk. So it's England. So it's got to be white people. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I can't deal with this level of ignorance. And the thing is, half these people who are ranting and raving, if they had any kind of common sense, you'll just go on the website to see who's who, what's what. And I think even to me, like, even if you didn't know who was running Ancestral Voices, just go on the website and look at the kind of content that we're putting out. I'm sorry, but no white people ain't putting out content like that. I'm sorry. They ain't going to put out content like that. Because from our very beginning, we're very like, we'll just keep it raw. Like, there's certain things where it's just unapologetic. And even when I do the YouTube interviews as well, I let people speak and have their own opinion. Like, some people have said to me, like, ooh, someone said this or someone said that, and you didn't say anything. And I'm like, do you know what? I'm not here to silence people's opinions. I may not always agree with what you have to say. Mm-hmm. I will respect your right to say it. And I feel like it's so important that we just have people express their opinions and we learn from it. And if you don't want to take some of that information, you discard it. But allow that platform. And I feel like this is such an important conversation when it comes to social media and platforms and even down to self-ownership of some of these platforms, especially as now we're seeing suppression of voices. And as you mentioned, within the Black British Parent, there is sometimes you post certain content which some people may find offensive and whatnot. But how are we going to have discussions that impact the community if we're too busy trying to shut down someone else's opinion because we don't like it? And at the end of the day, sometimes the greatest learnings come when you are triggered, when somebody has upset you, when you're actually forced to confront something. So then, you know, being able to see something from someone else's point of view only helps your perspective. 100%. And if they have offended you or they've upset you, you have to question, is it a legitimate upset? Like, is there a reason why you're upset? If the person is generally rude, then cool, just ignore them, block them, whatever. But you know, I think that we should get to a stage where instead of trying to fight to shut pages down and shut people up, we should really be more open to having discussions. And I feel like as a community, we need that. We really need to put a mirror up to ourselves and question our behavior, question things that happen in our community. But most importantly, especially as, you know, this whole conversation is about spirituality, it always begins with self. So if we're looking at our community and seeing certain levels of dysfunction, we have to wonder what levels of dysfunction are going on within our own beings. And we cannot stand and hold someone else to be accountable for something when we're not prepared to hold ourselves accountable for our own actions. So there's a whole wider conversation in that anyway. But in general, I feel like when you do start getting into the spiritual knowledge, one of the things that it will make you do is start to confront who you are as a person and really start to kind of break all those aspects of yourself down and realize, you know, what makes you tick? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your trigger points? All of these things, you have to start to learn to deal with it.
100% agree, because that's something that I definitely endorse, especially particularly within the parenting realm, you know, because if we can't be accountable for ourselves and hold reflection to ourselves, yet we're expecting our children to do that and we're not setting that example, like we're setting our children up for failure from the get-go and confusion. Do you know what I mean? One of the things I notice, if I get really upset about a situation, I might get very angry, super angry. I might flip the script, right? But then, on, you know, after a few days or a few hours afterwards or something, I look back and think, what was it that triggered me? Was it them, or was it because of something inside of me that I experienced? And when I delve deeper and deeper, often I find that it wasn't even my own belief systems that triggered me. It's the belief system that was put upon me by someone else. Do you know what I mean? It was like a conditioning that was put upon me. And you know, that when that person or whoever put it on me, I may not have remembered who that person, where that conditioning came from, but it's so embedded in me that I take it as my own. And it's it's not until I dig into it that I realize it wasn't for me to carry. And once I let that go, those kinds of things don't trigger me as much anymore. I think what more so would trigger me, though, is imagine if I was sensitive and you're carrying on like that. That's enough to trigger me. It doesn't take much to trigger me. But you know what I mean? It's that concept of being accountable, being responsible, and doing that work of self-reflection. I think it's super important. So I definitely appreciate that comment, the what you shared there. But yeah, no, I still don't feel comfortable on camera. She says, it's still like, I don't know, again, like I feel like it's very different when the work I'm doing with families, like I can deal with, like, anything I say on camera is going to be a walking contradiction, because it doesn't apply to everyone all the time, isn't it? So when I'm working with a family, I might have two different families that's going through the same thing, but because of the family setup, I'd give one set of advice or you know, some things to reflect on, and I'll give the other family something completely different. But if I gave each family the different, it wouldn't work for those families. So I find that's what I find challenging when talking to the people. I'm not necessarily sure who I'm talking to, and someone's going to get triggered and offended, and there's no room to talk that through. Whereas when I'm dealing with families, if something I'm saying is triggered or traumatized them in some way, then we can do that work to walk through that and see where that is, and I can assist and support them through it. So I think that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of, a bit reluctant, because it's all kind of, social media is very superficial, I find, you know, unless you've got the real ones on there. And then on top of that, society is becoming more and more sensitive. You can't say anything without upsetting anyone. Do you get what I mean? It's just like...
It is difficult. It's like a minefield, isn't it? And that's why I say that, like, I feel like I love the fact that you created your platform, and I feel like you shouldn't be apologetic for creating it, because there are conversations that the community needs to have. So as you said, it may not be for everyone. Like, that may not be where a stage a certain family is, but I don't think you should feel bad for saying it. You know, as I said, I've had various different guests, and some people will say certain things, and it's like, it is what it is. But, you know, I feel like we have to have these conversations. Like, in terms of even down to our research, if we were so sensitive, half the research that we've gone and do, we couldn't even do it. Anybody who's looked into, like, these ancient books where they're talking about African cultures and stuff, some of the terminology they use, like, you can clearly see it's coming from like a white colonial perspective, and some of the terminology is really offensive in today's terms. But am I going to be like, oh no, I'm not going to read it? You know, you read it, but you take what you need and you discard the rest. It's that simple. So we can recognize that there's different things in different times. It may not necessarily resonate with you, their approach, but if you're looking for information, information comes in all sources from all different types of people. So sometimes I think we're more worried about the messenger than the message. And so for me, it's always about the message. 100%. You know, sometimes it can be the most person that you don't like. You're like, I hate this person, but they may come and say something that's so truth that it hits you in your core. You're like, ouch. I can't ignore that. Do you know what I mean? So I say, let people speak and don't feel apologetic for your platform, which is ultimately allowing all these different perspectives to come to the table. We need to have the conversation. And if we don't have the conversation, we're not helping ourselves to grow, because we're just shutting it in a room and ignoring it. And that's not how we resolve anything.
Right, you guys, you heard it from the Empress yourselves. Do not get triggered. I'm joking. You get me?
Well, I didn't say you won't get triggered.
We got to do the work in it, and that sometimes takes, oftentimes, in fact, the majority of the time takes for us to be uncomfortable. Do you know what I'm saying? To be able to make those changes, because you're comfortable already, then there's no point in changing because you're comfortable, isn't it? And if you're feeling like you're feeling stuck, or you know, something ain't making sense, or something ain't sitting right, then it's that time to start, you know, doing some research and delving into listening to yourself at least.
I was just going to say that we're all a work in progress anyways, and taking steps to work towards, you know, healing yourself. And that's definitely something that we should all take on board, is ways that we can help to build ourselves. So as you said, journaling works for you. What do I say? I would say is my most releasing thing. I like spending time in nature. That's generally something that if I'm feeling like stressed or out of sorts, I will just go and chill out in my local park. I'm blessed to have a park like 2 minutes walk from my house, and just literally just connect and allow myself to just feel peace in myself. And actually, as I'm talking about nature, I have to really get into this point that, once again, I'm talking about spirituality. If we acknowledge ourselves as spiritual beings, everything for us is based around nature. And nature is so important and fundamental to our very existence. And we're living in a time now where so much energy, time and attention is being put onto technology. And so often now we're stuck in spaces like online, or we're on our phones, on our computers, watching TV, whatever it is, all these devices, that it's so important to just kind of allow ourselves to connect with what's real. Because we're living in a world where a lot of artificial stuff is being promoted, whether it's artificial foods, you know, everything. And so if you connect with nature, particularly some like bare feet, connect to the ground, you are just kind of recharging your body naturally and realigning yourself to your core self and not this kind of distraction. So you mentioned that you like journaling. Journaling is a very fantastic way to just really connect with your thoughts and allow that to spill out on the paper. For me, I've got into more kind of journeying in my mind. So this is like a meditation state where I'm like conscious, and then I use that state to kind of tap into the kind of spiritual existence and receive messages and guidance and, you know, connect with my spiritual team. And I found that to be such a powerful thing for me to do. And I found that since doing that process, it's really helped me not just to find more peace and balance within myself, but just also the fact that it's opened up my own connection in terms of aiding my intuition and really taking me a lot further in terms of being able to receive information as well. And so I would say meditation in whatever form it takes. So as far as I'm concerned, journaling is a form of meditation. The journeying is a part of that. Chilling out in nature is a part of that. Whatever it is, whatever means that you find helpful, for some people it may be like yoga or dance or singing, whatever it is that puts you in that state to allow you to feel good and to connect with yourself, do that. Because we live in a world that is so fast paced as well, where we're being pushed, you know, you got to do your 9 to 5, you got to do this, you got to, you know, do all these things, that we wonder why we're constantly anxious or fearful or stressed out or having all these different types of illnesses, is because a lot of times we haven't even had a chance just to think. Like, who are we when the TV's not on or the mobile phone screen is not on? Like, our own thoughts don't get enough time to register for us. And when we start paying attention to our thoughts, as you said, you can start to identify certain patterns in your behavior, in your thinking patterns. You can recognize, you know, maybe there's certain times of the month or there's certain times of the year where your process of thinking changes. If we take time out in silence, we can observe these things. And this is why, you know, spirituality becomes important in terms of recognizing who we are as an entire spiritual being and not just this kind of physical body that we've been taught to identify with, and everything is all about the physical. So that just keeps us locked in this reality. And for many of us, because we know spiritually that there's more to this, we can end up living this life feeling like depressed and just limited and restricted, not realizing why we feel like that, but it's because we're suppressing who we truly are.
100%. And to add to that as well, it's like that even helps us to align ourselves with the right energies and people and who and what we attract into our lives as well. Because some of us keep on, for example, having certain relationships. They might not even be intimate ones. They could be just business ones or friend platonic relationships, and keep on having this certain type of energies and can't shift it. And we have no idea that it could be the way that we're thinking until we reflect on that, or perhaps we're not getting the right guidance, as you were saying, in terms of meditation and tapping into source, shall we say. But Verona, we can talk for hours.
I've enjoyed this.
Yeah, but thank you so much. I always admire what you and your husband are doing, and I feel always inspired by you guys and what you're doing. And I think, like, secretly, Black British Parent has definitely been inspired by what you guys have been doing with Ancestral Voices. So that's why I'm always dragging you lot in wherever I can. Come on, and let's talk. And it's always a blessing. It's always a wonderful conversation, as with many of our other guests that we always have. But I've known you for a very long time. You said about 10 years. And hopefully you'll join us again. I know you will.
Yeah, I love you. I just want to say thank you. I love what you guys have set up. I think it's phenomenal. And it's lovely to see people taking initiative and recognizing that, you know, this space needs to exist. And a lot of people like recognize that certain things need to be done, but will complain about it from the sidelines, but not take action. You guys have taken action and set up a platform where people can come together and, you know, we can all tap into this collective base, and it's needed. And that's the same with us. I can recognize within you guys, I see ourselves, because we recognize with the whole African spirituality conversation, it's like, where is the space? So instead of complaining about it, we created it. And I love that. So that's just taking ownership and, you know, following your path that you're destined to do. And I love the work that you guys do. So I'm honored to come back as a guest at any time.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm just grateful that you've given me the platform to be able to share what we do and just learn a bit more about me as an individual. And, you know, but it's great. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Verena. So please let our listeners know how they can tap into you and get in touch with you and your works.
Yeah, so you guys can hit us up at ancestralvoices.co.uk, where you can find all of our learning resources, books, courses, documentaries, the whole nine yards, and interviews with a whole bunch of spiritual practitioners across the globe as well. There's a lot of content on our website, so it's a great hub for anyone who's genuinely interested in learning and finding out more.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us in this episode for Black British Parent. Until next time, take care, be safe, be well.
Bye.
That's this week's episode of the Black British Parent podcast. Be sure to go to blackbritishparent.co.uk to join the conversation. Thanks for listening. Until the next time.